In July this year, a royal commission will begin investigating the casualties of war that occur off the battlefield. At least one former or serving member of the Australian military dies by suicide every 2 weeks. The Royal Commission into Veterans Suicide will commence its work in July, and the Federal Veterans Affairs Minister, Darren Chester, says families and survivors will get a chance to tell their stories.
Unquestionably, the families, the survivors of mental health issues, people who work closely in this field will have the chance to present to the Royal Commission. They'll have the chance to influence the terms of reference over the next 4 or 5 weeks as we do this consultation period.
That's the Federal Veterans Affairs Minister Darren Chester speaking to us earlier on Breakfast. Nikki Jamieson's 21-year-old son, Daniel Garworth, suicided at a barracks in Darwin in 2014. In the years since then, she's been pushing for a Royal Commission. Nikki Jamieson, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Nikki. How are you after this news? Obviously, a Royal Commission's not going to bring Daniel back, but do you welcome this? Do you feel he'll somehow finally get a voice through this?
No, you're absolutely right. It's very much a bittersweet moment for me and probably for a lot of the parents who've been pushing for this and a lot of the community who's been pushing for this. You know, I'm not going to get Daniel back, so he won't be able to share his voice and stand up there and, you know, share his truth, but I absolutely welcome the announcement of a Royal Commission, and I really look forward to receiving the terms of reference and being able to provide input into that, because we really do need a deep, thorough and wide terms of reference to guide this approach.
It's been taken many years of work by you and others to get this commission up and running. The government wasn't in favour at first, but the minister told us he's been listening. Are you confident that the terms of reference that the government is interested, after its initial resistance, to a deep, thorough and wide Royal Commission inquiry?
If they're actually prepared to listen to the lived experience, listen to defence, listen to veterans and listen to those that are pushing for a Royal Commission, then we will have confidence. At the moment, it sounds like it's quite limited. So again, unless it's very deep, thorough and wide and completely separated from any influence from defence and DVA, that's when we can see a really good, effective terms of reference.
Why do you think it sounds quite limited at the moment? When the Prime Minister talked about it yesterday here, there were a list of themes, everything from pre-service to recruitment and training, to how information shared between agencies, to protection and rehabilitation for defence members and veterans who have attempted or contemplated suicide, to making that transition out of the Defence Forces more supported. That's a fairly wide list, isn't it?
It is, yes and no. So suicide behaviour is not just an individual issue. It's a complex interaction of distal and proximal factors that are heightened by a range of systemic and systematic failings from both defence and DVA. You know, there's a culture that perpetuates a culture of bullying, violence and abuse. This is not an individual's issue. And a lot of what was said yesterday was about those individual related actions. This is about the systemic and systematic failings that we need to address.
Is that
it needs to be wider.
Sorry to interrupt you. Is that the culture that you think traumatised your boy?
Oh, absolutely. 100% without a doubt. Not just my boy, but a lot of the veterans that I've spoken to over the 7 years since Daniel's passed.
Because a lot of what we talk about and think about and presume when we're talking about veteran suicides is, you know, people who have seen horrible things in war coming home and, you know, operating under that pressure on a battlefield or in that situation coming home and, you know, being left with that sort of trauma in their heads. But that's not the only thing that leads to a veteran taking their lives, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, the study that I'm doing at the moment, I'm about to submit my PhD in this space, looking at the concept of the moral implications and the moral trauma of service. And nearly half of the participants in my study have never been overseas, have never been deployed in active service overseas. Their injuries and their suicide behaviours actually stemmed from very poor leadership and the culture of the ADF at that time.
So can you tell us more about that? When you talk about moral injury alongside PTSD and it's often misdiagnosed, I think, as PTSD, what is it? What is moral injury?
So moral injury is, as you say, it's often misdiagnosed as PTSD. It's basically those core moral foundations, our core beliefs and values that we truly believe in that have been violated, significantly violated or betrayal. And the actual injury and trauma itself is trying to reconcile those injuries, trying to reconcile that trauma and come to terms with what has happened and why. You know, there's an expectation in defence around loyalty, honour and commitment. Mm. So when your chain of command stabs you in the back, that's the number one cause of moral trauma in the study.
So it's not just moral injury experienced when someone's serving in another country and they, you know, see and leave or witness people in situations where they can't assist because it's not the mission. It's not that. It's something different to that back home.
That can impact on the moral framework as well. Obviously, you know, seeing children being killed or seeing, you know, women in terrible abusive situations can create a moral trauma and moral injury. But as I said, nearly half of my participants, their moral injuries occurred whilst they were on home soil.
Okay. This Royal Commission will run alongside the existing Interim National Commissioner, well, the Prime Minister's already established, and that role will be made permanent. The government says they'll be complementary. When the Interim Commissioner was announced, you welcomed it, but there were concerns. Are you concerned about having these two bodies, whether they get in the way of each other, or can you see this working long-term?
Look, I think the National Commissioner is a fantastic function, absolutely, and Bernadette Boss is absolutely wonderful. I've met her a couple of times. This is really new, uncharted territory for Australia. We've never in our history had a parallel Royal Commission against a National Commissioner. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but ideally the Royal Commission is supposed to do its work and do its job, and then the National Commissioner is designed to implement the recommendations. So if I were to, you know, suggest anything, I would say the National Commissioner role would probably work well in more of an administrative function, actually supporting the Royal Commission, so mm-hmm. supporting people to help share their stories, because there is a culture of silence. You know, it's a culture that largely demonises those who speak out against the chain of command. Mm. So it'd be good for a National Commission to support that. And, you know, integrating government responses, providing education, promotion, that sort of thing.
That's going to be a major hurdle, perhaps, do you think, for this Royal Commission, because the people, like yourself, have been calling for it, are demanding that the veterans and the families of the veterans are front and centre, that it's not, you know, hearing from the officials, hearing from the institutions, or led by that. It's led by the families and the veterans themselves. But as you say, there is a culture of silence in a way. How big a hurdle is it going to be to get over that? And are the choice of the commissioners themselves key to that, in your view?
I think so. I mean, part of the military training is really embedding those values of loyalty and honour and doing, you know, putting everybody else above yourself. So that is intrinsically shaping their moral framework. So that is going to be really tricky to get over. And this is about current serving members as well as veterans as well. We want to create a strong, sustainable and a defence population that we can retain. So in doing so, they need to come forward. They need to tell us what the issues are so we can bring them to the surface and start to resolve them. And hopefully the National Commissioner and her team will be able to, you know, encourage more of that.
There will be three commissioners, we think. The Prime Minister says that'll, you know, match the complexity expected from this inquiry. And after talking to you, you can see the sort of the complexity of the breadth of issues to deal with. There has been concern expressed by some that anyone with a military background or ties to the military not be appointed as a commissioner because they'd be too close to the process. What are your thoughts? Who should be these commissioners? What sort of people?
It definitely needs to be somebody who is independent. I mean, obviously, there's going to need to be some advice from Defence at some point along the line, but the process needs to be fully accountable and transparent. So, you know, suicidologists in the space, psychologists, veterans, Defence, you know, people who've worked with Defence personnel, and people obviously with a legal background, of course. Yeah, would be good. I mean, if I had names, I'd reel them off, but there's nobody.
No. There's been more than 400, probably more than 500 suicides by serving or former military since 2001, since, you know, we went into Afghanistan. That is that period. There's been 13 veterans we know of taken their life this year. There's been a surge in recent years. Do you have any thoughts about when the government has now announced that we will pull out from Afghanistan altogether? This follows the US announcement. That might spark another sort of dangerous time for veterans of those wars, of that war in particular, but the Iraq War too, thinking about what was it all about?
I think it's not so much pulling people out of those roles and pulling out of Afghanistan. It's the support they get and access and feeling like they can be supported when they get home. That's the problem. You know, for some, it'll just be another change of job. They'll do the work on base, on home soil. Mm. For others, it'll be much more, you know, much more powerful. The impact will be much more powerful because maybe they've done quite a few deployments over there and it's formed part of their identity. So, yeah, I imagine there will be, you know, some impact from this. But, you know, for some, they'll probably be cheering that they don't have to go back into that space again.
For sure. Nikki Jamieson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Nikki Jamieson, her 21-year-old son Daniel, took his own life in 2014. She's been pushing for this Royal Commission for some years now. And if you or anyone you know does need support, you can contact Lifeline on 13114. Or if you are current or ex-serving ADF personnel or families, you can call Open Arms 1800 011 046. That's 1800 011 046.